Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is here for another week with the professor, the publisher, and the editor of the Media Project, your opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and maybe, if we are really on our game, insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany, which is where this program originates. Sitting here next to me, Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. Sir?
That's week, W-E-E-K or W-E-A-K?
Yes, news issues of the week, the okay. W-E-A-K, that would be so, us, yes. Except for He-Man himself, Dr. Alan Chartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor, pundit, etc. Sir? Are you there?
It's the Iron Man.
Hi there, Rexy and Ira. Good to see you.
Why, it's great
good
to see
you. Sincerity James dripping. A. Farley might have said, good to see yous.
Good to see yous. I missed last week's taping because we had a little plumbing disaster in my basement. Yeah. Yes, we had water overflowing the hot water heater. And so, what can you do? These things happen even to major show business personalities like ourselves here.
Like yourself.
Well, I was speaking to myself in the plural. You know,
nothing to do. Nothing to do with the Watergate plumbers.
You're in a different group.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's talk about real celebrities. Let's talk about television. There is a notion that MSNBC is making its transition. MSNBC, a couple of years ago, clearly aimed to be the alternative to Fox News and began focusing its programming on being left-sided commentary. Now, NBC News is led by Andy Lack. He's the chairman of MSNBC. And he has decided that they need to be straighter, right? Is that the right word for it?
Well, they're trying to rejuvenate a network that has been in third place, and they're trying to do it by becoming more like CNN during the day, but hopefully for them, retaining their liberal roots in the evening programming. So it's a fine balance, and there are people who watch MSNBC who are the liberals and progressives who are afraid that what's going on there is going to make them less liberal and progressive and then less of a counterbalance to Fox News.
I would point out, if I might, that Morning Joe is anything but a liberal.
Yes, but that was the exception, and it has a very small audience.
Oh, is that right? Does it have a small audience?
I didn't know that. Small but influential, Alan, because I believe you watch it, right?
No, well, what
but it happens that it is a small but influential audience.
I watch it every once in a while. Yeah. I find him to be really obnoxious, so I find it very difficult to watch him.
They just expanded it from 3 hours to 4 hours per day.
Well, they're talking about it. Hasn't started
yet. Oh, hasn't? Is that right?
You know, they're also trying to figure out a way, because their programming is live, and it begins at 6 o'clock Eastern time, they're not getting much of an audience on the West Coast. So they're trying to figure out, and I think if they extend an hour, that would be one of the ways to reach that audience. You know, I agree with you in terms of ideology regarding Scarborough, but the fact is he really is the only voice from the right, even on that program. He's certainly the only voice from the right on that network, but on that program, he's their right-wing voice. The others tend to be more liberal or middle at the very least.
Well, the reason I say that, Ira, and I have seen plenty of people center-right, you know, on the show. But the reason I say that is that there may be six people sitting there, but he talks half the time. So that counts for a lot.
He has a lot of O'Reilly in him. He can be a bully. I do find him a little bit more, for want of a better word, sane than what you typically hear on Fox from the right.
But the interesting thing is that the notion that what they've been trying to do is what looks like the same banner of NBC News, MSNBC and NBC. They've tried to have one that is biased to the left and one that is straight. And I think now what they're trying to do is say everything comes under the same set of criteria,
mix.
Yes.
Well, but they're also making a concerted effort to become more of a straight news, breaking news outlet during the day, because a lot of their left commentators were on during the day. And of course, the big experiment there is that Brian Williams returned to TV is as their breaking news anchor. He's been relegated to MSNBC, and he is on when there is breaking news, such as the Pope. There were a couple of other stories his first week back. And by the way, he's quite good at that. I've never been a Brian Williams fan. I thought he was too wordy and all the rest, but he's very good on breaking news coverage.
Yeah, well, you can correct for wordiness. Just tell them don't talk as much.
Yeah, well, but he's able to move a story along, and he's glib, and he can interview people on the fly very well.
One of the interesting stories, by the way, in the world of media business is the recovery of local television. That is, about 5 years ago, I remember sitting here in this show saying, boy, those guys are way behind on digital. They're where we were in newspapers 5 years ago. They're going to have a terrible time. In fact, local television has gained a footing, and I think it's because it still remains a great way to do storytelling. And as they are moving more into a digital transmission of material, it comes just as people are signing onto single boxes in their homes. So they are well equipped to become the vehicle by which news gets delivered, whether you take it by computer or take it off a TV set or whatever way
you're talking about a local news outlet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
But we're also talking, Rex very well said, about convergence. We're all doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The WMC has a wonderful web page, and we carry all kinds of stuff. You guys do marvelous work with your web, and it's never enough. So the question is, when does it converge? In other words, when does it all come smashing together? Because the newspapers, you go to the New York Times now, there's video all over the place that you can click on. And of course, the Times has now announced that they've gone over the top on their media.
A million people pay to get New York Times content digitally.
I'm one of them.
God bless him. Yeah.
And I get my money's worth because I wake up 3 times during the night and I always check in on what they got.
Huh. It's not a very long night for you either. So that's
No, it's not. It's 5-6 hours.
Wow.
Now, the New York Times is claiming to be making money, but how about the rest of the print world and the local TV, as you say, and all of the other digital outlets that have sprung up? There is so much out there, and there's only so much advertising dollars to go around. Certainly, we know where a lot of that money has come from, which has been print. But I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised to hear you talk about the local news. Well, I don't know if it's a renaissance, but we've forever been saying they're in as bad a shape financially as is the print press.
Well, let me just say, Ira, with all due respect, they're all making money. They're all making some money. And you guys, Rex and Ira, know far better than I do about this. So you get some of the digital first newspapers that you used to work mm-hmm. for, and there are a lot of them now. And I was talking to a guy the other day who knows about the finances of a particular paper. And this is a paper which doesn't have a lot of content in it. And he said they're still making several $1 million a year.
Without a question, most newspapers are still profitable entities, but they're nowhere near as profitable as
they used. So you're not pigging out the way that they used to.
Well, but meanwhile, you've been establishing how much money you're going to spend based on how much money you're taking in. And because we're not taking in as much, that's why you're seeing all the job cuts.
Well, that's what I mean by pigging out. You guys are oinkers.
Well, I wouldn't call it pigging out. You're talking about having enough journalists to cover community. So if you're pigging out or you're funding good journalism, that's a relative term.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that, Rex, because I read your newspaper, the Albany Times-Union, and it's an excellent newspaper. You've got a lot of people working for you. You've made some decisions. Your numbers are down in terms of the numbers of people who work for you. Nevertheless, you still have a pretty good cadre of people covering things. And I'm always impressed by the breadth of the station. No, I mean it.
But look how many more he used to have. Look how many more my newspaper used to have. So that it only goes, it's not criticizing anybody to say if you have less people, you can't be covering the community.
Well, but here's the problem. You have to go into the room and defend your budget to the hedge fund guys who are sitting there.
Well, not in my case, it's not hedge fund
guys. No, that's right. No, it's not in your case.
No, my company.
Your Hearst newspaper, but in Digital First, you do.
Yeah.
And then you see some of their newspapers. And is it the biggest newspaper having more papers than anybody else right now, Digital First?
No. We're second to Gannett. Yeah. Gannett, by the way, just bought the paper in Milwaukee.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
From you? From Digital
No,
First?
From Journal Media, different company.
It was itself, basically.
But still, I'm simply saying that Rex's paper, they've let some people go, but it's still a very good newspaper. It's got a lot of stuff in it. Whereas some of the papers where the hedge fund guys, when they go in to see them at budget time, insisting on maintaining profits, and they're down to a skeletal staff.
I don't want to defend the hedge fund guys because I don't agree with everything that's happened during their stewardship. But let's face it, if you own something, whether it's a newspaper or a radio station or a grocery store, you're in business to make money, and you're taking all of the risks. I mean, you're suggesting these guys shouldn't take a profit. Now, I would draw a line at being too piggish, to use your word, but they need to get a return on their investment.
That's true. But the point I made before is that they are getting a return on their investment. The question is, how much of a return are they getting? And if they're just concerned about the money, look, I don't have to tell you or Rex, in the old days when I was born, you know, 74 years ago, those people were newspapermen. They served their community. They weren't purely there in order to make profit. They were there to run newspapers. That's all changed.
Well, but long before there were hedge funds, there were owners of newspapers. And using New York City as an example, when I was a kid, there were, I believe, 8 or 9 daily newspapers, and they slowly closed as a result of a union action in the mid-60s. That was the tipping point. But these were not people who were motivated originally by greed. They just couldn't stay in business anymore.
So the decline has been long-term, you're saying, long before the internet age speeded it up.
Of course, Ira, you don't know what motivated them.
Influence. They all wanted influence. Yeah. That's what motivated most publishers. They wanted to have an impact in their community and make money at the same time. But when you started to lose the New York Herald Tribune,
that was a real loss.
The World Telegram.
That was a real loss.
Yeah, you had the World Telegram and Sun, which was a combination already of other titles creating World Telegram and Sun.
And they had the Teacher's Page, which is why my mother bought it.
The Teacher's Page.
The Daily Mirror.
Imagine
which was
that.
The counterbalance to the Daily News in those days.
Imagine that. All those newspapers, and they began to lose money. My colleague Harry Rosenfeld, my predecessor in this job,
excuse me, I have to clear my throat.
Was the foreign editor of the New York Herald Tribune, and if you read Harry's memoir, it's astonishing the way they used to spend money overseas, and the shock that came to all of them when suddenly it was announced, we're going to have to close our doors. And that was in the 1960s. This is sort of the natural evolution of media. It has been this way for generations now. It's just that it's painful to go through, and we don't yet know whether the public is going to be well served by what emerges, by the infrastructure that really emerges, whether the same kind of reporting is going to be possible.
But Rex, you make a very good point, and I just want to follow up on that for one moment. And that is, if you're doing it, and you're doing digital, and the TV stations are doing digital, and the FM stations and public radio stations like ours is doing digital, sooner or later, people are going to have digital way of going. They're going to go either, as Iris' company might have been called, Digital First, they're going to be going on their computers in the middle of the night, either to the New York Times or to MSNBC or CSNBC. At what point does one become preeminent over the others?
Well, the New York Times has been successful because it, generally speaking, has a preeminent product.
That's
why it has been successful.
That's a good name.
But a lot of the other products are smaller and are less able to produce the kind of quality that the New York Times is known for. So, I mean, the answer to your question, it goes back to my earlier point, is that there are so many outlets out there now seeking advertising, and many of them are not good enough to be head and shoulders above the others and thus driving the lion's share of business.
I think two things are going to make the difference. First, do you offer something that is unique in your marketplace, which newspapers have been able to do because we had enough profit to have big staff, so we could create reporting that TV stations could only copy. So if we don't have as much profit, will we still be able to create unique content that is worthwhile? Second will be credibility. Do people trust you? Why would somebody buy a newspaper, pay to go see stuff on the web, listen to a radio station if they don't believe what they read? And that's actually an emerging issue which we need to talk about, because the Gallup, in its latest survey, just says that now just 40% of Americans have a, quote, fair amount of trust in the media.
Okay, but Rex, in all due deference to your superior mind, which certainly is, I would say...
He gave me all due respect, and he gave you all due deference, and then he lowers the hammer.
Kaboom comes
no,
the only
true.
Guy in the room with a PhD.
No,
yes,
true.
Sir.
I do have immense respect for Rex. but it seems to me that there's another way that they can go. It has nothing to do with trust. It has to do with dirty pictures. And what my mother might have called dirty pictures. So you go to the Daily News or the New York Post, it's one as close to nude picture after another. And by the way, I check them out in the middle of the night also.
I don't mean it's very good of you to say.
No,
this.
I don't mean the dirty pictures.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
No,
you don't?
No, I don't. I don't like that stuff. But I go to their home pages. Uh-huh. And I look for what news they're carrying.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you
it's
only
precious
look at it.
Little news. They're not carrying a lot of news. They've got three or four stories up there, and that's it.
Yeah, that was like the old thing about the guys who used to subscribe to Playboy to read the essays.
I'll tell you, today, as we speak, the Daily News and the New York Post is about as much skin as you could get on the front page without showing it all between Justin Bieber skinny dipping somewhere.
Nude.
And the paramour of
And they
the,
put a guitar over his crotch.
Yes, and then you have the new girlfriend of the basketball coach, the New York Knicks basketball coach, who, to use what I think I'm allowed to say on the radio, is a lot of side boob. But a quick glance at that front page, you would not even realize that there was anything.
I thought side boob was what Barney Fife was. Anyway.
By the way, one of the historical, talking about the transition of newspapers, the older people in the audience will remember that the New York Post used to
P-O-S-T.
Be the liberal paper in New York City, when it was owned by Dorothy Schiff. And as it transitioned ultimately to Murdoch, it now became the conservative paper in town. So there are not only financial changes, but ideological changes.
By the way, if you want to be a part of this conversation, media@wamc.org is how you send us email, and we'll get to it next week. We can't really do it, of course, at this moment, because as you listen to this, we're not here. But media@wamc.org, it's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here in Albany. And I should just point out, by the way, that there was a fun little repost. Repost, is that how you say that?
Retweet.
No, I don't mean the retweet. I mean the R-I-P-O-S-T-E, however you pronounce this in American English. Response, that would be from Gawker, a popular online site, to Gallup's survey that I was just citing. 40% only have a fair amount of trust in the media. Gawker responds, well, guess what? We don't trust you, blank, either. Routinely failing to read past the headline, forming strong opinions on issues with virtually no understanding of them, loudly condemning entire segments of the media for the most shallow political reasons, crying out for more substantive coverage and then paying attention only to sex, to your point, Alan, celebrities and animals, can't take a joke, can't detect sarcasm. So basically, Gawker is saying, you know what? The public trust in the media is approaching the media's trust in the public. You know?
How much of the public's distrust of the media can we point to the media's own fault and carelessness and errors and the like, and how much of it can we point to the partisanship of talk radio and of Fox and MSNBC?
It actually extends far further than that. It has to do with our schools. Rex, for years, has been working on trying to get people in schools to teach news literacy to our students. Big problem is that kids don't want anything to do with news. Not really. And so Rex has had a dramatic battle going on to make sure that they did get something, but apparently the movement has failed.
Well, it's in nascent, as they say. I mean, I think we're just getting underway, and we do need to work in our schools in getting kids to care about what's going on beyond their backyard and getting them to care about more than just what celebrities are doing. And that, of course, begins with adults. I mean, you know, we're expecting a lot of our schools, it's true, if we expect them to build the character in kids that will lead them to care about their communities enough to pay attention to the news. But that's where we are at this point.
We're getting worse, Rex. In all honesty, the kids use their devices, their iPhones and their Androids and the rest of it, to get stuff. But very little of it is news, real hard news.
But did you, well, you might have been different when you were a kid.
No, I read a lot of newspapers.
No, that was going to say.
He was different when
I read a lot of newspapers. I couldn't help it. We had 6 newspapers in our house all the time.
I know, and I'm saying, I remember my dad bringing home his reel-to-reel tape recorder from his office so that I could record the president's State of the Union address. Now, is that ridiculous? And taking notes when the president unveiled his cabinet.
Isn't that interesting?
How
my
strange.
Mom brought her tape recorder from her Board of Education digs home, and we recorded. It's very interesting. We recorded the Army McCarthy hearing.
Oh, my goodness.
Actually, Edward R. Murrow's coverage of that program.
Really?
Yeah, and I remember it very well. That tape became very important because, of course, there's no such thing as videotape. And so I was asked at my Joan of Arc Junior High School to bring it around to all the social studies classes. Huh. And they played them for the kids. They played that tape for the kids. Imagine how far we've come where everybody has a device that can record anything, anytime.
So that's a good thing. That is the opportunity for reaching people with significant reporting, with contact with important public events is right there in hand. It's in everybody's pocket.
I'm sorry.
Speaking of being in your pocket, there it goes. Is that not a great little bit of timing?
Rex is going to call you out on this. we're in the middle of the
It's a remarkable thing. Step
project.
Away from the microphone, Dr.
Right
Chartok. Absolutely. There we go. As we were just saying, it's in everybody's pocket, and there it goes. And we have this opportunity, though, if we can only convince people that they need to pay attention, if we can build the audience.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I maybe it's simplistic, but when you have a number of people who turn on to Fox News, and there are others who turn into MSNBC, but Fox News has made a business out of it, hearing commentator after commentator not only give their perspective from the right, but say how the left-wing mainstream media got it wrong. And it's that drumbeat, that hypnotic quality to that commentary has to be doing something to hurt our standing in the eyes and ears of those who hear that day after day.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that every one of the news organizations now has a professional Twitterer. We have one here at WMC, and everybody is encouraged. After every story is on the air, and you do a lot of this about the Media Project, Ira, somebody is going to tweet and say something. Rupert Murdoch, of all people, is a big tweeter.
Yep.
And today he got himself into a little trouble because he said something like, I heard it on the BBC this morning. Mm. He's in a little trouble because he said, what America needs is a real black president.
Oh, boy.
Right. And it festered for 12 hours. And this morning, as we speak, he tweeted apologies.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Somebody said to him, after all of the vitriol that was pointed his way, somebody tweeted, it must have said to him, fix this. And so he apologized.
Well, you can tell Rupert Murdoch to fix anything?
I think even Rupert Murdoch would listen when he realizes he's really put his
foot in
his mouth.
This is one of the hazards of digital media and of the immediacy of social media. You get stuff out there before you have a chance to edit it, before you have a chance to think.
Well,
it happens all the time.
Well, also, there's this new deal where what you do is you say something because you're a smart person, you know underneath it all it's not really right. You say it, and then you apologize for it. So you get away with it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets out there, and yet that's potentially true. I don't know if Murdoch was the case. What's interesting, by the way, about Fox News is decrying mainstream media when what could be more mainstream than
absolutely.
Fox?
Well, if the definition of the number of people who watch them, it certainly has a sizable enough viewership to become mainstream.
And the ownership by the greatest billionaire media mogul alive today, if that's not mainstream, what is it?
But we can't ignore or pass off as a fad this tweeting business. If you read the cover story in the New York Times magazine about Donald Trump and how effectively he uses Twitter to build his brand and to keep his name out there.
Yeah, not effectively enough. His numbers are going down.
We'll see. I mean, I think all three of us would agree we didn't think we'd be talking about Trump 4 months after his campaign started.
And we've heard a lot of other liberals, Alan, with this wishful thinking that Trump would disappear. So we'll see.
Let me ask you an honesty question.
Okay.
Which is defined of, if you lie, a lightning bolt comes out and hits you in the head.
Oh,
okay,
boy.
So that is an honesty question. All right, ready? Did you think in the beginning that Trump would disappear, that he was not a credible candidate?
Yes.
Without a doubt.
You have avoided a lightning stroke. So don't start with you liberals.
Right, absolutely.
But now as we sit here, can you imagine there are people who honestly believe that it's a possibility that the general election will pit Donald Trump against Bernie Sanders? Now, how many people? I know Alan has been a Bernie Sanders supporter for quite some time, but in your heart of hearts, did you really think he'd be doing as well as he's doing?
No. I didn't think he'd be doing as well, but I announced pretty early that I was somewhat favorable to him. But I do resent like crazy, and I want to just make that point, that I have heard from at least three people who have had the the nerve to say to me that why doesn't WAMC, your public radio station, cover Bernie Sanders? Now, Bernie Sanders has been on this radio station hundreds of times. Anybody who listens to our 28 radio stations knows that that's the case. And once again, I just want to take this opportunity to bitch about this because we all are sick and tired of people calling us and telling us we don't do what we do.
Okay. And on do, we have to stop. Well, we're out of time.
We can add some time because of Alan's phone call.
I like that
part.
Oh,
you want to keep that in?
you want to keep that in?
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful part of
the program. Well, my wife has a wonderful ability to figure out, without knowing it, intuitively, like all wives can do, where her husband is and what he's doing. And she knows.
She knows.
She knows that I'm doing the media project on
That's a wonderful thing.
There
but you're a good husband because you answered the phone. I would have waited till after the show.
And at that point, we have to go, folks. Thanks for joining us, the professor, the publisher, and the editor on the media project.
I've been married for 45 years. So I know how to do it.
Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not be.